Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We have a new AM and FM outreach director, Betty McCardle. She's based in Portland, Oregon. She has a long background in community radio, and she was recommended by her predecessor, Gavin Dahl. I appreciate that, Gavin. Betty's got lots of experience. She loves nonprofit radio, so I know that we are in good hands as we bring more affiliate stations to the flock, the family, the foundation, the community. Very glad you're with me. Betty, welcome. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with simpatico tonia if you got me nervous with the idea that you missed today's show. Prosperity paradox. Silicon Valley boasts 76,000 millionaires and billionaires and revolutionary innovation, yet local nonprofits struggle to meet demand and suffer inadequate reserves. Researchers Alexa Cortez Culwell and Heather McLeod Grant explain the disconnect and the lessons for your organization. Their report is The Giving Code. On Tony's Take Two, I've got a planned giving webinar coming up. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven, and technology-enabled. You'll raise more money. Pursuant.com. And by We Be Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers. WeBeeSpelling.com. I want to welcome Alexa and Heather to the show, but they haven't called into our line yet. So we're waiting. Sam, of course, is struggling. You're sending them texts to Sam? Okay. Sam is trying to get them on the line. The Giving Code is their report, and this is based on Silicon Valley new philanthropy and the paradox in Silicon Valley, where there is enormous wealth and enormous innovation and research going on, and yet Silicon Valley nonprofits are struggling to meet what are actually growing needs. We're going to talk about the shrinking middle class in the Silicon Valley. The ladies define the Silicon Valley with in terms of two. There are two counties, and we'll talk about those that they define as the Silicon Valley area, specifically for their research and the report, The Giving Code. So it's frustrating to hear that with the enormous wealth, and we've got statistics like, it's a super rich place. The number of millionaires and billionaires has grown incredibly in 6 years from like 2008 to 2013. Individual giving rose incredibly from like $2 billion to almost $5 billion, 150% increase. The number of millionaires and billionaires now at 76,000 in these two counties, Santa Clara and San Mateo counties. So enormous wealth and considerable growth in giving, but the nonprofits in those two counties are struggling. I'll tell you what, we're going to go out for a break, and I'm going to regroup and see what Sam has done, and maybe I'll call the women myself and see what's up with how come they haven't called into our line yet. So let's go out early for the break. We're going to come back with The Giving Code and hopefully the two co-authors of The Giving Code. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for The Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. We've got one of our co-authors. I think it's Alexa. Alexa, is that you?
Yeah, hi, Tony.
Okay, Alexa.
Good to meet you.
Thank you. Alexa Cortez Cullowell, co-founder of Open Impact and a longtime philanthropy advisor, speaker, and facilitator. For the past 25 years, she's built and managed foundations and philanthropic initiatives for successful entrepreneurs, including serving as CEO of the Charles and Helen Schwab Foundation. She's at Alexa Cullowell, and Open Impact is at openimpact.io. Welcome, Alexa.
Thanks for having me.
You're
really
welcome.
It's a pleasure and honor to be with you.
Thank you. Is Heather going to be calling in shortly?
I am sure she'll be joining us as soon as she can.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see her on the panel. We have the dashboard for the conference line. Okay. So let's get started. I gave a little overview while in the first block while we were waiting, hoping you were going to call. Silicon Valley is very rich. I went through some statistics about the number of millionaires and billionaires there, 76,000. But talk about the growing need. I didn't cover this part yet. The growing need that nonprofits are facing.
Yeah, so we uncovered that there's this incredible growing wealth in the region, and with it is growing philanthropy. And then there's what we call a prosperity paradox, and that's exactly right. So it's this enormous economy and all of these wealthy people, and yet 30% of our residents are relying on some form of public or private assistance.
Yeah, that's incredible. A third of residents need some kind of public assistance?
Nearly a third,
yeah.
Yes. And one in three, which is a third, of our kids are going hungry. So they're on free and reduced lunch programs. They're accessing food from the food bank and other things.
What is the nonprofit community like there in terms of numbers and size? I know it tends small and struggling, but give us more color than just that.
Well, like the rest of the United States, the majority of our nonprofits are small, under $1 million in revenue. And since in the last 10 years, we've actually seen a lot of growth in the number of our nonprofits to almost 3,100 nonprofits in the region. And so we have a lot of nonprofits, a lot of small ones, and we also have nonprofits that are struggling to get by. So they're being displaced by this economy. They're under siege. And what's interesting is not only are they kind of being displaced, they can't afford to actually operate in the region. The demand for their services is at an all-time high. So people are on wait lists. They're being, they're just asking for help that these nonprofits can't keep up with. And
yeah.
So that's kind of the irony of all of this. And as a result, our nonprofits are struggling. So they actually have deficits that are above the national average for organizations their size.
Mm. And also being displaced from office space because it's the Silicon Valley. And I mentioned earlier San Mateo and Santa Clara counties. That's how you define Silicon Valley. Office space is at a premium, so that's costing them and that's hurting them. I have some of the stats from your executive summary. 80% of nonprofits report an increase in demand for services over the past 5 years. 74% don't have access to high net worth donor networks, significantly hindering their outreach. We're going to talk about that, the gap there. 51% say they will not be able to meet demand for services this year, and on and on. You've got very nice multicolored summary there on page 3 of the executive summary. Lots of pretty colors in those stats. I appreciate the color. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and thanks for actually reading the report. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I do.
What'd you
I
think?
Do,
I was going
to urge what? People to dig into our data. It's awesome, and there's a lot of it.
You think I don't prepare for the show, or what? What do you think?
Just, you're very well prepared.
This is off the cuff. Well, we haven't spent the hour together yet. We'll see what happens when 1:59 Eastern rolls around. We'll see if you still say that, but. The summary, I have to critique a little bit. because it's my nature. I thought the executive summary is a little on the long side, 16 page. I mean, I'm executive summary. I'm looking for like two paragraphs.
Well, then I won't torture you with the full report, but it's 79 pages of even more data, graphics, and deeper insight. And I really would urge people to get into the executive summary, and if they're interested, to really, really dig deeper into some of the analysis and implications for their work.
I'm well.
This is 16 pages. It's a really tough topic, and I think we're going to need to really kind of carefully consider these issues if we're going to actually want to solve them.
Well, I'm well acquainted with
point taken.
Okay, no, but I'm well acquainted with the full report. I've read large pieces of it. I did not read all 69 pages, but okay. You know, executives, I mean, I'm a busy person. I don't know. I'm sure you're busy, but I'm busier. I need two paragraph executive summary. So please, maybe you need a summary of the summary. Can you do that?
Yeah. Well, I think the summary is pretty straightforward. If we want to give it to people here, and then they don't even have to read the report, they can hear your interview.
Well, there you go. Okay. I mean,
I've got it.
Like I'd say, executive summary is the situation sucks. It's bad, and
we
can do some things to help it. Is that too curt?
Well, I think that's the setup to this report. The setup is we have growing wealth and growing philanthropy in Silicon Valley. We haven't even dug into that. So it ends up that all these wealthy people in Silicon Valley are actually giving a lot of money away.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the disconnect is that money is not making its way to local causes and issues
and local.
The community-based organizations
that
kind of are the champions of those issues and those residents who need help.
And
that's the case in many communities, right? I think this is a trend we're seeing across the country. We're seeing increased income disparity. We're seeing growing need by the residents who are the most left out. And then a nonprofit community that's under siege. And so we're interested, and yet we see this growing wealth, and we think, well, are they giving money away? And if so, why isn't it making its way to me? Where is this money going? And so in Silicon Valley, we track all of these statistics. We tracked individual giving, the growth in private foundations, this phenomenon called donor-advised funds, and also corporate giving. And there was more giving everywhere. That was kind of the astonishing fact. But the majority of it does not go to our local organizations.
Right.
And Heather's now on the line and can be brought into the call to add into this dialogue.
Okay,
whenever
Sam,
you're ready, Tony. Right.
Yeah, we have Heather. Okay, wonderful. Let me introduce her. Heather McLeod Grant is the other co-founder of Open Impact. She's a social entrepreneur, author, and consultant with 25 years of experience in social change. Both of these women have 25 years. Everybody's got 25 years today except neophyte host with 20 years. She is a co-author of Forces for Good, The Six Practices of High-Impact Nonprofits, which was named a top 10 book of the year by The Economist. She's at HMC Grant, and again, Open Impact is at openimpact.io and also at Open Impact Team. Okay, Heather, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tony. Thank you, and I apologize for the technical difficulties.
That's okay. We'll berate you later. It's not, not on the air.
Yes.
It's okay. So Alexa and I have been diving in, and let's bring you in. I guess we were really at the point where we're saying that essentially the need is scaling much faster than the support is growing locally. That's the point that Alexa was just making. Heather, let's bring you in. Let's bring you in with an explanation of what the giving code is.
Yeah, so the giving code, we talk about it in the report, and we talk about it being this kind of implicit approach to philanthropy that many of these new donors have. That is very much, it's very much informed by their business background and experience and their sort of expertise in technical companies. So, for example, they're very focused on impact. They're very driven by metrics. They like to measure outcomes. Not surprisingly, they're innovative and disruptive. So they really like to think about, you know, how they can hack systems and change things like education or healthcare. Mm. They're very connected and networked with their peers. Again, many of these new donors are in their 30s and 40s. They've grown up in the era of social media. They like to do things with their peers. So we see a rise in giving certain kinds of group giving activities. And, you know, they're really, again, their approach to philanthropy is very much informed by their business background and experience. And so sometimes, unfortunately, there's a disconnect between this kind of business-like approach to philanthropy and the approach that community-based organizations take.
Yeah, and in fact, well, first I want to just make something explicit. When we say they and they, in terms of the donors, we're talking about newly wealthy philanthropists, new high net worth, ultra high net worth, millionaires, billionaires in that two county area, the way you, the two of you define Silicon Valley. There's also a skepticism of nonprofits, Heather.
Yes, absolutely. So they look out across the landscape and they see this fragmentation among nonprofit organizations, and they really think that nonprofits aren't being business-like enough in their approach. So again, it doesn't mean that nonprofits are wrong. They're just not meeting the expectations of some of these new donors. And they do tend to be skeptical. Nonprofits don't inherently have scale. Almost 80% of them are operating on less than $1 million in budget. That's true for these two counties, and it's true for the rest of America as well. So these are guys who are used to running multi-billion-dollar companies, and they see these small, tiny nonprofits, and there's just a massive disconnect.
You mentioned the growth of unicorns in Silicon Valley, which is, the unicorn is a greater than $1 billion asset value pre-IPO, and how the number has grown to 20-something, right, I think, in the region.
Yeah, there's 21 unicorns in these two counties now. I'm sure there's something like 46 or 47 nationally. But, you know, more than or almost half of the unicorns that we see now are here in Silicon Valley. And you're correct. That's kind of the local jargon or lingo for startup companies that have $1 billion valuation pre-IPO.
Yeah, I have it. In 2011, there were 3 unicorns. And 2016, there were 21. And again, just enormous growth in wealth and scaling. So you refer to bigger, better, faster, essentially to summarize what the newly wealthy philanthropists think and how they think. And then there's this skepticism of nonprofits. I mean, you don't use this word, but would you say it suggests a certain arrogance among these folks?
Well, you know, some would use that word. We we don't say it's arrogance. I think it's perhaps more ignorance or not understanding how social change works. But, you know, I do think some of these donors can come across that way in their approach to social change. They think, well, I built this $1 billion, you know, app that scaled in 3 years.
I'm
going to go fix public education. And they don't really have an understanding of how complex these social systems are. And again, they're really obsessed with scale and, yes, moving really fast. And unfortunately, social change is an entirely different beast than building an internet company, right? It's complicated. It involves multiple stakeholders. You often have to find ways to work with and partner with government to leverage the significant resources that are already in government. You've got to engage communities, and you're really trying to solve market gaps where there actually isn't a paying customer sometimes, right? It's, you know, solving homelessness is not something that you can do with a technical app. So the complexity of these problems, I think, sometimes flummoxes these new donors, and they do come in with this mindset of, you know, I built this huge company, how hard can it be? And I think what we've seen is many of them over time, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, and others have learned that it's actually really, really hard. These are really big intractable problems, and it takes time, and it takes patience, and it takes resources, and it takes working in very different ways than just building an internet company.
You and Alexa are very non-judgmental in the report.
I'm going to jump in here. It's really not about judgmental or non-judgmental. We find that's not really going to help us get to a solution, and we call it the empathy gap. Because when people start relegating each other to arrogant one percenters or social do-gooders,
we find the conversation just stops and everyone walks away frustrated. Why Heather and I wanted to write this report is we wanted to really probe more deeply, like, how could we get these two sides that are so disconnected, who speak such different languages, who have such different mindsets and frameworks, how could we leverage their strengths to come together to really solve community problems? And if we stop at just going, okay, they're too arrogant and you're too much of a do-gooder, we don't get to the solution. And the reason we wrote the report is we wanted to get past kind of those stereotypes and begin to bridge the empathy gap that is so wide right now.
By the way, Alexa, our listeners will know that earlier when I said, I may be busy, but you're busier. I mean, what did I say? I may be busy. You know, I said, you may be busy, but I'm busier. That's what I said. Listeners know that I was joking, but you might have rolled your eyes and said, who is this clown? But, that, you know,
I hope you didn't. No, I'm on to you now,
okay,
Kenny.
Good.
I've known you for 20 minutes. And
yeah, it usually takes about 30 seconds for people to recognize my, I'm judgmental about myself, arrogant, certainly big doses of sarcasm. So, all right, well, we're all busy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Heather, that was in the context of, I was saying earlier, when I see executive summary, I expect like two paragraphs, not 16 pages. And then the 69 page full report that I had to read, you know, so but I was asking Alexa to scale it down, but I understand it's a complex problem. And you know, all right. But I expect to pay executive summary. I was scrolling through the PDF. I was like, what, this is a summary? You need a summary of the summary. Okay.
Yeah, we got a little ambitious. My last project was a book, and so Alexa keeps joking that I was trying to turn this into a book. So,
all right. Well, you're in the right trend in terms of at least my attention deficit. So, you know, the next thing you could do instead of a report, maybe just do a paragraph.
Right.
Let's.
Well, we could try. I suppose you could sum it up. You could probably get it into 140 characters if you tried really hard.
Yeah. Well, basically, it sucks. I had said that earlier. All right. Let's get to the. To the challenges that you identify between that are preventing the two communities, the newly wealthy philanthropists and the community-based and nonprofit organizations, from coming together. Alexa, let's go back to you. You basically, the first one is they don't know each other. That's how I put it. I'm using my words. You have different, you know, you encapsulate differently.
If you live in Silicon Valley, it's a pretty compacted place. We're not talking about this enormous area. These are two counties, and people live pretty close together, and some of our poorest neighborhoods are right next door to some of our wealthiest neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And yet, these two groups of people, the ones who have all this capital and are giving it away, and the ones who desperately need it in order to help our most needy residents, they just are worlds apart. They have completely different networks and ways of thinking about place. And at the heart of it, it really is about community and place. And so the donors are often globally minded. They're working or running global companies. They're traveling all over the world for those companies. And they will have homes in different places and relate and identify with different places as their home and community. Whereas the nonprofit and community-based organizations that we work with are really thinking about place as the place where we live and raise our families and our kids go to school and where we go to work every day, and this is our community. And it deserves our attention, and it deserves to be healthy and vibrant for the sake of all of us. And so those social networks just don't meet as often as you might think. They're like worlds apart, even though they may only be blocks apart.
Yeah. You call it the, more articulately, you call it the knowledge and information gap. I was just saying they don't know each other. Let's stick with you for another one, what you call the social network and experience gap. I just say they don't have ways to get to know each other.
That's right. They're not at the same cocktail parties. Vacationing in the same places. They're not even going to the same grocery stores.
And even though they live sometimes within a mile of each other.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's just a very stark contrast and kind of an odd conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes sense, right? I mean, their sense of place and community is different, and their social networks are really different.
Heather, let's jump over to you and continue this thread on the gaps, the what you call the mindset and language gap. I just say it's they look at the world differently.
Yeah, and that's going back to a little bit of what I was saying before about this language of business and metrics and scale. And that's a language, you know, that these tech entrepreneurs have come up in. Many of them have had almost no exposure to social problems or public policy or government or social work. And on the other side, you have nonprofit leaders, many of whom came out of programs for public policy or social work and who really speak a much more moral language, a language of ethics and social justice and taking care of the least well off. And so, again, we find that there is kind of a disconnect in terms of the language and frameworks and the mental models, if you will, that these philanthropists use versus the language and frameworks and mental models that community-based organizations in particular use. And layer on that many of these community-based organizations are serving low-income populations. Sometimes there's literally a real language gap. Sometimes these populations are speaking Spanish or they're low-income Asian communities. So you've got lots of different layers of disconnect, and that leads to what we ultimately say is an empathy gap. And that's why we don't like to use words like arrogant. We don't want to point fingers because we actually feel like that's already happening too much. It's too easy to write off these business people as being arrogant and greedy, and that's actually oversimplifying, and it's not also taking their good intentions into consideration. We really think we need to get beyond the empathy gap and have each side try and understand the other and the world that the other is living in, and that's what's going to ultimately help bridge these gaps.
Okay, perfect. Ladies, we're going to take a break for a little while. I have to do a little business for our sponsors, and of course, we're going to continue our conversation for the remainder of the hour. And now that we've talked about what the gaps are, we'll spend the balance of the time talking about bridging those gaps on the positive side. And encourage you again to have a two-paragraph summary of your executive summary. So stay with us, ladies. There's more of this prosperity paradox coming up. First, I got to chat with you about Pursuant, because they have a new infographic, Grow Your Monthly Giving. Your problem, you need to raise more money. Solution, in part, monthly giving. And that's what the infographic is about. It helps you whether you're creating a program or trying to convince your board or your CEO of the value of a sustainer program, or you need to grow your existing program in your fundraising mix. The infographic has got strategies to launch and grow, tells you how long you can expect sustainers to stay with you, and gives you tips for attracting new donors. And there's more to it as well. It's all in one infographic. Amazing. It's very highly concentrated, very dense with value. And it is at pursuant.com. Click resources. My voice just cracked again. Resources. 14 years old. Click resources. And then infographics at pursuant.com. We be spelling. Spelling bees for fundraising. You need a fun millennial event? Check out their video. It's from one night of spelling and stand-up comedy, music, great fun. The video is at webeespelling.com. Now for Tony's Take Two, I am doing a free webinar. It's coming up later this month. It's Jumpstart Your Planned Giving. How to get started, who the best prospects are, what are the types of gifts that you can start promoting right away, easily. Dispel yourself of the myth that planned giving is only for larger organizations and only for major donors. Both of those are incorrect, both fallacies. I'm going to explain planned giving simply, not using my legal background. I can explain it to you so that you will understand it and understand how to get started. You know my focus is small and mid-size shops. That's who the webinar is for. It's on Thursday, March 16th, 2 o'clock Eastern. Affiliate listeners, there is time for you to be with me. I know sometimes the timing doesn't work for you by the time I put something in the show, and then by the time your station airs, it may be too late. This one, the timing is perfect for you. It's March 16th. There's still time. You register at tony.me/jumpstartyourpg. The link is also on my video, which explains a little more about the webinar. And that video with the registration link is at tonymartinetti.com. And that is Tony's Take Two. And I feel like doing Live Listener Love, Podcast Pleasantries, and Affiliate Affections a little differently today. We have listeners all over the country, all over the world. But today, instead of identifying city and state and sending love and pleasantries and affections, we're all one big nonprofit radio family. Flock. Not a church. I almost said church. Not a church. But we're one family. Whether you're listening live right now, or among our 12,000 podcast listeners, or among our AM and FM affiliate station listeners, today we're one big nonprofit radio family. So the love and the pleasantries and the affections go out irrespective of what your method of listening is. I'm very glad you're with us. That is Tony's Take Two. All right. Let's bring the ladies back. And, you know, you have something interesting here. Anybody can comment on this. The you devote a page in the full report to the Gadwani brothers. They sold their company to Netscape in 1998. And in 2003, they co-founded a nonprofit, the India Community Center. And basically what I come away from that page is they recognize, the brothers recognize that this is hard work having a nonprofit.
Yeah, I love that story in our report. And Tony, it does prove that you're a much more diligent reader than you let on, because that's all the way on page 54 of the report. But there was a couple of reasons we wanted to feature their story. They're immigrant Americans who came from India. They started a really successful company that's contributed to the economy in the valley. And then they decided to give back by starting a nonprofit that would serve the Indian diaspora in Silicon Valley, that would be a gathering place for Indians to come and to share culture and food and language and ping pong, which they love. And so it's an enormous community center, not unlike the Jewish community center model we often see in the U.S. And they started the very first one in Silicon Valley. And we talked to them because we wanted to hear about their journey starting a community-based organization and also about how philanthropy works in other cultures and communities. And, you know, philanthropy is a rather novel thing to America. It's part of our culture, and it's distinct from cultures in other parts of the world. And so they just shared how challenging it's been to raise money from other Indian Americans around this really compelling nonprofit that they're building, because they prioritize helping their families back at home, giving to higher ROI causes in India, where you can literally save someone's life or set their whole life on a new trajectory by sending them to school for hundreds of dollars a year.
Yeah.
And get this incredible return. And so they've been on a journey to figure out how to build a sustainable business model for this very vibrant community center that they started some time ago.
That was Alexa, right? Is that just Alexa speaking?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
so.
It was me, Alexa.
I'm at a little disadvantage because you sound a little alike, but I figured.
Yeah, sorry about
that. That's okay. No, it's your voices. Don't apologize. And I just want to remind listeners that Alexa Cortez Colwell and Heather McLeod Grant are the co-authors of this the study called The Giving Code, and also co-founders of Open Impact. Ladies, how come Open Impact, your consultancy around social impact how come you're .io? You didn't get in early enough to get .com or .org or .net? Well, you're not .org, but how come .io and your
trendy and hip.
Oh, trendy and hip. To me,
.io is kind of the forefront of the new. Yeah, but you know, a lot of people buy up lots of names with .org from .com, even though they're not using them. So we just went .io.
Okay. So in other words, you came late.
Because
all right.
Yeah.
It's cool because why? OIIO.
Well, it's right? Cool because .io is also Open Impact's initials backwards.
Right. Yeah, so it's a palindrome.
That's right.
OIIO.
Exactly.
OI.io.
Of some kind.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you take just the initials, but it's not It's not OI.io. Yeah. It's OpenImpact.io.
While you're on our name, we will tell you why Open Impact is such an important name and part of the value of the work we do, which is we think that nonprofit leaders today are constantly balancing the tension of staying open and adapting to the complexity that they're dealing with all around them. The external landscape is so volatile, but they're also being required to really measure their impact and report that in clear terms. So we are really committed to writing and speaking and publishing about that, and we help our clients with that tension.
Yeah, you have a very good video at openimpact.io. Whose fireplace is that you're in front of? That's a beautiful fireplace. Is that one of your homes?
No, that's a dear colleague of ours who lent us his living room.
Oh, okay. I kind of wanted to see the kitchen. I was hoping the second half of the video was going to move into the kitchen because the fireplace is beautiful.
The kitchen's fabulous.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. All right, maybe the next video he'll let you use the kitchen. Okay. Let's go back to the substance, though. So let's start bridging the gaps. I don't know who wants to take the first way, but you do something, you suggest something called Connect to Build Empathy. Who wants to talk about that?
Yeah, this is Heather. So
yeah. Okay.
I'm happy to jump in on that.
All right.
So I do think bridging these gaps really starts by finding ways to bring these donors and these nonprofits together. And there's a couple of examples in our community of organizations that are doing that. We've also seen that traditional intermediaries, their role has very much changed in this landscape. I don't think Alexa touched on this before I joined the call, but just in brief, our local United Way has merged, so we now have a Bay Area-wide United Way that's serving like 12 different counties. And our community foundation is very nationally and globally focused and working with many of these donors on all levels of giving, but not just community giving. So what we're finding is as these intermediaries have kind of changed their role in the ecosystem, new intermediaries are having to step in and fill some of these gaps. One example is SV2, Silicon Valley Social Ventures, which was actually founded, I think, 16, 17 years ago by Laura Arriaga Andreessen. And it's a giving circle where donors actually come together, meet local nonprofits, vet them, they pool their money and their resources. So you don't have to be a billionaire. You don't even have to be a millionaire to join. You can contribute $6,000 or $7,000, pool your money with other donors, and then vet local nonprofits and find those that you think are, you know, the most interesting, having significant impact, have leadership that you like, and basically make an investment in that organization. And what's really great about this model is many of the partners in this giving circle actually take board seats or become mentors to the nonprofit. So this is, you know, one example, but we think it's the perfect example of what we need a lot more of, which is opportunities for these donors to actually connect with these leaders, mentor and coach them, start having a conversation where the nonprofit leaders can teach the business leaders about social change and why it's so complex and why it's sometimes really hard to measure their impact. And at the same time, the business leaders can bring their technical and their marketing and their strategy skills to these nonprofit organizations and really help them be even more effective. So it's, again, connection and learning together, we find, is a very effective way to start bridging these gaps.
Yeah. Engagement, if I put a word to it. Genuine. Did we just lose Alexa? I don't know. Heather, you still with us?
No, I'm here. Oh. I'm good.
We're here.
Oh, you are? Okay. So whoever was... whoever was listening on the call, the third party that wasn't invited just dropped off. All right, they could have just listened online. It's so much easier than calling in the number. And I think, you know, this is the section, bridging the gaps, that has the real value, I think, for our listeners, you know, because these are things that nonprofits can do in their own community. You know, there are lessons. That's why I wanted to have this conversation with you ladies, because there are lessons for the entire nation's nonprofit community based on your findings just in two counties in California. What do we got?
This is Alexa. I think you're exactly right. I mean, the report has received a lot of national attention because issues of income disparity, issues of the wealthy and philanthropy and the very unhealthy state of many of our local community-based nonprofits is something that is concerning in many, many cities and urban areas and even rural areas in the country. So I do think we've been surprised at how much it's been resonating, because on one hand, Silicon Valley is so unique, But on the other hand, it's part of the really odd story that we're also so much like other places.
Yeah, well, it's a well-written report, and that it comes out, the value for the community nationwide comes out, if I can call that a community. And all that national media attention has brought you to this moment, nonprofit radio. You see that, right?
Yeah, and we're grateful to you.
You see that?
Thank
yeah.
you.
Okay. Well, I don't know what other national media you were on, but it's brought you here. So those were all just stepping stones. All right. Let's
absolutely.
Let's continue to bridge the gaps. Thank you for agreeing. You have no choice. I understand that. Let's continue bridging the gaps. Who wants to talk about creating educational opportunities in your step two?
Well, this is Heather. I can jump in again. I mean, two thoughts. First on the, like, this resonates across the country. I mean, one thing we are doing, you know, we start to tee up solutions in the report, but we are actually starting to focus even more on what would it take to implement and execute some of these solutions in Silicon Valley, because we actually do think if we can start to solve some of these divides here, that's a model that other communities might want to emulate. But going back to what you said, Tony, I think it does come down to engagement. And one thing we're realizing is that both sides need to be educated. That can happen through connection and experiential learning, but both sides really need to build their capacity to engage with the other. So in this case, many community-based nonprofits, they're so resource-strapped, they're so focused on being head down, trying to serve the communities they're serving, that often they're not actually doing a good enough job of creating real donor engagement opportunities. Finding ways to connect into these networks, to tap into these networks, I get it. That takes time and money. And when you're serving the poor, the temptation is to spend all your resources on your programs, but then you have nothing left to build your organization and build your outreach and build those donor engagement opportunities, or even to market and get your information out so that these donors even know that you exist. So we think there's education opportunities on both sides, opportunities to build the capacity of nonprofits to be more sophisticated and how they reach out and engage these donors, and how they have theories of change and strategies, and how they measure their impact to the extent that they can, and how they can tell stories that use metrics, not just wonderful anecdotes. I think, again, playing to both the head and the heart. Same time, donors need education, too. We were astonished, as we talked to many of these philanthropists, how long it takes them to get up the learning curve, sometimes 5 or 10 years. And there are some programs out there, the philanthropy workshop being one. There are some other programs out there that focus really on donor education, but we need many, many, many more programs like this, because there are many more millionaires and billionaires who are coming online with their philanthropy and are kind of stuck. They don't even know how to get started. So education can also be a stepping stone.
Yeah, and creating...
I would also add, though, that giving circles are accessible in communities all over the country, and the data is showing that when a donor joins a giving circle, they give more and they give more faster. They accelerate their giving, they're more satisfied, they're more confident. So, you know, a really simple thing nonprofits can do is help think about curating giving circles or joining with partners. And if a donor is listening to this podcast, you know, joining a giving circle is just a fabulous way to accelerate your impact.
Also,
nonprofit side.
Also, just creating or seeking out volunteer opportunities. And I have to stop you, Alexa. Hold on. We have to take our last break. Hold that thought, please, and we'll continue.
No problem.
Okay, hang on.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag Nonprofit Radio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
Hi, this is Claire Meyerhoff from the Plan Giving Agency. If you have big dreams but a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. I'm with Alexa and Heather, and they are co-authors of The Giving Code. That is their report, and you can find their full report and the lengthy executive summary. That's my judgment. I am not non-judgmental. I am judgmental. You can find the full report in all its robustness, both forms, at openimpact.io, which is actually a very pretty site, ladies. All right. And I do love that video. That's a very good video of the two of you. Okay, Alexa, I think you had a thought that I cut off. You want to share it?
Well, I was just saying that, you know, a creative thing for a nonprofit to do would be to curate a giving circle on the cause that their organization is all about, and to try to get some donors in to learn about the issue and to learn how to give. And donors likewise can find giving circles. There's lots of those in their communities. It's an easy way, easy and accessible way to plug in. Nonprofits, I think there's lots of capacity building opportunities for nonprofits, and they really need to think strategically about building their capacity to pitch their organization proactively. So what a lot of donors told us is they're often coaching nonprofits on what they need rather than having a nonprofit pitch them, kind of anticipating what they're going to need. And I think it's pretty easy to anticipate what these donors need. They want like a really clear narrative about what the organization does, and they want really clear numbers. They want to know very basic things in a very clear way, like how many people do you serve? How deeply do you serve them? What's the evidence you have that something is changing in their lives for the better? And how much does it cost to do that service and why? And nonprofits really struggle to just step up and frame those issues in a non-apologetic way. Whenever Heather and I are out talking to nonprofits, they really struggle to just kind of state it and to state it clearly. And so the best advice we can give in terms of educating yourself is to go out and really learn how to put together a solid plan that you can pitch to donors that really anticipates their objections. Like, you know, overhead is a big objection donors often will express. And the leader who just, like, gets ahead of that, you know, who really explains what the organization does and why, how they do it so efficiently, is really going to win with donors versus one that's kind of caught on their back foot trying to answer that question.
Yeah, you refer to the overhead myth. And I thought we were past this. I had, back when this happened, when GuideStar and Charity Navigator and Better Business Bureau, Wise Giving Alliance created this problem, I had the three CEOs of those organizations on, and we talked about the overhead myth letter that they all signed for the country. And this was back like 3 years ago. I think it was 2013. Are we not past the overhead myth among, well, let's talk about the cohort you're dealing with, among newly wealthy philanthropists? Are they not past that overhead myth problem?
Well, Tony, this is Heather, and it's interesting because my book, Forces for Good, came out almost 10 years ago, and we started to take on the overhead myth in our book back then. And I think, unfortunately, even though those of us who are kind of insiders in the nonprofit sector feel like, you know, haven't we gotten past that, guys? Haven't we said it's really about impact and outcomes, not the inputs that it takes you to get to that impact? Unfortunately, I think some of these new donors coming online are not yet with the program. And these kinds of, you know, stereotypes and overly simplistic ways of looking at measurement, unfortunately, continue to persist. But as Alexa said, We've also seen amazing examples of community-based organizations taking that argument and just flipping it on its head. So one great example, Peter Fortenbaugh, who runs the local Boys and Girls Club in our community, serving literally thousands of low-income students and kids and partnering with schools. He's really been a social entrepreneur, and within the Boys and Girls Club network, he's really innovated around their core model. And, you know, I went to a fundraiser they had 2 weeks ago, and not only did he have the CEO of YouTube, Susan Wojcicki was a judge on the panel, he had the CEO of LinkedIn in the audience, and he had Sheryl Sandberg as his opener, the COO of Facebook. And when he got up to give the pitch to that audience, now, Peter, by the way, has a Harvard MBA, worked in tech, former McKinsey, really smart guy, made some money and now dedicated his life to service and running this grassroots community organization. So he knows how to talk to these donors. And he stood up and he made a pitch that you would hear kind of on Sand Hill Road in the Tony kind of blue chip venture capitalist offices. He stood up and he said, guys, this is not charity. This is an investment. This is an investment in the youth in our community. This is an investment in where we live. This is an investment in our future workforce. And by the way, we hire top talent. We have a great organization. We have state-of-the-art technology. We don't work on 20-year-old computers. And guess what? That costs money. But if you invest in us, here's the return you're going to get on that investment. And he walked through the numbers of the impact that they're having. And I'll tell you what, they raised $1 million in one night in that room.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that's an example of what we don't see enough nonprofit leaders doing, is getting out ahead of the argument, anticipating the pushback, and saying, yeah, you know, you want me to run a small, shabby organization that's never going to scale or have impact? Fine, then we can talk about overhead. But if you really want me to have impact, you got to pay for the things that it takes. So we would just love to see more nonprofits in the country learn from these examples and figure out how to do this and get on the front foot rather than being on the back foot.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. We have just about like 3 minutes left together, ladies. So, and I want to get to the rest of your specific methods of bridging the gap. Let's just stay with you, Heather, and talk about just in like a minute or so, increasing coordination and collaboration among nonprofits. And then also among, I know that's hard to do in a minute, but then also among the, let's just talk about it for the nonprofit, just on the collaboration on the nonprofit side. Okay, please.
Yeah. So I'll be quick, and then I'm sure Alexa may have something to add as well. But, you know, I've done a lot of work over the last 5-7 years in my career working on networks and collective impact. And we actually think this approach holds great promise when it's done the right way. Because you have hundreds, if not thousands, of tiny community-based organizations, the answer isn't necessarily to have them all merge, because that's not practical. But if you can get them more coordinated and aligned around the goals that they're trying to, the problems they're trying to solve, and setting shared goals and setting shared measurement and collaborating rather than competing against each other, you can actually have much more impact, and you can also attract more resources, because donors look out and they say, oh, finally, all these small little guys are working together on solving the problem. That's what I care about, so I want to put my money into that. So there's a couple examples in our own backyard, one called the Big Lift, which is an early literacy program for early childhood development, and they're working with several hundred nonprofits, they're working with school districts, they're working with the county government, and they have managed to create this kind of collective impact network. So we think, again, we need to see more of this in our sector. We need to see more nonprofits kind of stepping up and really getting aligned with other nonprofits and coordinating, rather than everybody kind of putting their head down and doing their own thing.
All right, you have, and then you have a fourth, which is building capacity and addressing costs, and we pretty much covered that, not under that rubric,
yeah,
but we've talked about that. So let's wrap up with, we just have a minute left, celebrating success. Please, Alexa.
Well, so whenever we see a philanthropist and a nonprofit doing this the right way, we need to tell their story. And in Silicon Valley, we actually have some really great stories of where this is working well, so it's not all bad news. We have some extraordinary philanthropists who are committed locally and telling their stories, why they're committed locally, how they give their money to smaller community-based nonprofits, how they partner with them is just critical to raising awareness that it can be a great and satisfying thing to do as a donor and go beyond just giving safe bets to your alma mater or to the things that are familiar to you. Stepping out of your comfort zone has huge rewards.
And
when you start funding these organizations.
And we have to leave it there. Alexa Cortez Culwell, she's at Alexa Culwell. Heather McLeod Grant, she is at HMC Grant. You'll find the report and the summary at openimpact.io. Ladies, thank you very much. Next week.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you so much, Tony. And
pleasure.
Thanks for being patient for us at the start of the call.
All right. Next week, doing good better. Effective altruism for individuals with takeaways for nonprofits, of course. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled, and by WeBe Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers. WeBeSpelling.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is on the board as a line producer. Betsy McCardle is our new AM and FM outreach director. Welcome, Betty. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, and this cool music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. It was like, yes. It was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gifts.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.